So a few months ago, I didn't get their permission, so I'll just say a couple of my kids, who I will not name, were walking around in downtown St. Louis, and that we encountered some people who were religious leaders, we'll say. And so they were talking to anybody who would listen, and we mostly avoided these people. But they had this idea, and their idea, which we found fascinating, but their idea was that in heaven, there are going to be 144,000 people, and that's it. Heaven is capped at that number. And we were kind of thinking, like, why would you try to, like, recruit others to be your competition? Like, if it's that, like, if that's that restricted, if there's 144,000 in heaven, and they had Bible verses, of course, like everybody does. But so we were like, why, you know, like, we, so fortunately for them, we decided not to listen and not to fight them for one of the spots in heaven. So we gave our spot to them. But I got to thinking about these numbers. 144,000, if that's heaven's cap. And I did a Google search. And my Google search was something like, how many people have walked the face of the earth since the beginning of time? And another friend, like, kind of went into another system, and we both got the same answer. I have no idea, and I'm sure they don't know if there's any accuracy in this. But the answer we got was 117 billion people from the beginning of time till now. So again, rough estimate. Might be accurate, might not. So I got to thinking, let me do the math on this thing. So I tried to figure out if there's 144,000 people who are going to make it, and there have been 117 billion who have who've walked the earth. What are the odds that you could be one of the lucky few? And so when I figured out the odds, I'm going to have to say the odds are not good. If you might be thinking like 1 in 100, you're off, because it's not good. Even worse, 1 in 1,000,000. So if it's 1 in 1,000,000 to go to heaven, I'm telling you, there's a chance. But it's not much of a chance. It's a 1 in 1,000,000. So go figure. That's why I think those numbers are pretty accurate based on that. But today we're getting near the end of this series that we started at the beginning of the year, and we've had gaps. It's called The Way. It's about the Sermon on the Mount. And we're trying to follow Jesus' teachings on what he taught about following the way of Jesus. How did Jesus live? How do the followers of Jesus follow that way? And it's a series that I've absolutely loved, because I'm more and more convinced of the importance of the Sermon on the Mount and what it says to people who are disciples, who are trying to follow Jesus. I think that's about the best thing that we could do, is read and try to follow the words in the Sermon on the Mount. So we're nearing the end, but we got some really interesting words today. We're going to start in Matthew 7:13. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. So when you read this here, one of my questions is, like, how narrow is this? How narrow is the gate? How narrow is the road? Who are the few? Is the few 144,000? You know, are the chances 1 in 1,000,000? Like, what does this mean? How narrow? So I'll have to say, this particular passage has really been one that I've been wrestling with a lot this year. Now, it first happened when I was meeting with a spiritual mentor and talking about my life. And the observation made by the mentor, it was, you're looking right now to broaden your perspective. And my first reaction was, that sounds bad. What about narrow is the road? Like, what does that mean, to broaden your perspective? Because I'm like, I don't want to be so broad that I'm off the narrow road. What does that mean? So again, I've been wrestling with this passage, wrestling with the call, because we did a series, I think, in March, deeper and wider, you know, and about who Jesus came, how he came for every tribe and every nation, and how it might be bigger than we think. And yet there's this passage here. So in the wrestling with, one of the things that I've thought about is the idea of narrow and wide, and the idea of narrow-mindedness. So I looked up the definition for narrow-minded, and this is what Merriam-Webster says. Not willing to accept opinions, beliefs, behaviors, etc., that are unusual or different from one's own, or not open-minded. So I was, again, wrestling with this, and what does it mean to be on the narrow road and like look to broaden my perspective? So I thought about my own life. So I grew up in Church of God, Anderson, Indiana. You would know why I did that if you were here last week. That's how we distinguished ourselves. So like I was born, raised, Church of God, Anderson, Indiana. Went to Anderson University, which is Church of God, Anderson, Indiana. And I met a girl there who didn't grow up in Church of God, Anderson, Indiana. She grew up in a different tradition. And I would just say thank God for that because it has helped broaden my perspective. She had some things that she saw growing up, and her perspective broadened. It challenged mine and broadened it. Or I think about people. Arthur Mbule, who's in our congregation, has been a mentor to me. He's from Mozambique. And so his experience of growing up in Mozambique and living here in the United States, his perspective has helped broaden mine. And I could say that with tons of different people from different cultures. Like, I have really appreciated the broadening of perspective. It's not just my very Midwestern Church of God, Anderson, Indiana perspective. And it's been so helpful. So there, I would say narrow-mindedness, it's maybe made me hopefully less narrow-minded, because I think most of us would say that's not great to be narrow-minded. That can be a problem. But what are we talking about here? Because I would use the word as enriching with a broadened perspective. So as, again, we wrestle with this and these ideas, let's keep going on into what Jesus said. Matthew 7:15. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? All right, so we have the word false prophets here. Maybe we could use the term false teacher, or heretic is a word that's kind of similar kind of word. So thinking about this and false teachers, think about if there is a well-known pastor or Bible teacher that you like. Now, if we did research on them, we would probably find all kinds of articles or YouTube videos or whatnot explaining why they are a false teacher, false prophet, heretic, whatever. And these days, it's pretty much unavoidable to have those labels. I don't think anybody's out there writing articles about me only because I'm not prominent or well-known, which is part of the reason I'm grateful to be at a small church. Like, I like it because there aren't just people. But I can almost promise you that if I were prominent or well-known, there would be articles or there would be videos of people breaking down and explaining why I am a false teacher. So this gets, again, pretty tricky, and people are pretty careless sometimes with that term heretic, or it may mean just a little bit of disagreement. You know, we could all kind of parse this. But I didn't want to do that. So I wanted to go to some examples of very clear what probably most people would say are false teachers or false prophets. One of the things that I try to do from this platform that God has given me is avoid criticizing famous people from this platform. I just don't do that. I try not to do it. Sometimes I'll try to use fairly safe historic examples. For example, I think Hitler is a pretty obvious example of what not to do, right? That's pretty safe and not controversial. So sometimes you go back in history. So I've selected some people to talk about who are dead. They're no longer here. And I think they're fairly safe examples of what not to do. So this year, oddly, and my kids have kind of laughed at me about Dad studying cults right now. So that, for whatever reason, I've been drawn to these documentaries and series on cult leaders or false teachers, people who are pretty clearly. So I'm just going to do a quick like recap of the four that I've studied. They've all gone before us, and the vast majority of people would probably say absolutely false teacher. So number one, Jim Jones. Jim Jones got his start as a pastor in Indianapolis, Indiana. You ever heard of it? Then he went out to California, and then he decided to start a compound in Guyana. They called it Jonestown, named very humbly after him. And in Jonestown, he got really famous because he was teaching. They were very exclusive, and he was doing all kinds of weird things, taking multiple women, and we could go on and on. But it ended when over 900 people drank Kool-Aid that was poisoned with cyanide, and they died. He had parents give it to their children, and so there was this mass, basically, suicide that happened where they all died out there. And so I think most people would say, yeah, Jim Jones, false teacher. Okay, moving on, we got another one named David Koresh. He was pretty famous and significant to you. He was part of a group called the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. They had a standoff with the government. The government found some things they didn't like. There was this big standoff. He was doing, again, some crazy things where he believed he was the fulfillment of Revelation. He annulled all the marriages, took the wives, and did some really, really bad things. It ended with a standoff. It's disputed who fired shots and where who started the fire. But most of the people in that compound died under David Koresh, who claimed to be like a Messiah kind of a figure. Next, we have one named Gwen Shamblin. There's an interesting documentary on her. She started out as a dietitian, Christian dietitian. I think Meridian might have even had this program back in the day. Some churches did. She was teaching people how to lose weight, mainly by focusing on being more hungry for God than for food. So she was a dietitian, had these workshops, wrote books, was well-known, famous, and then started getting criticism because she challenged the doctrine of the Trinity, said that wasn't a correct church doctrine, started a church called the Remnant Fellowship, where things got really weird, and people who tried to leave, there'd be lawsuits against them. We could say a lot about that group, but we're not going to get into the details, but there's another one, but they were the Remnant. Last, we're going to go with a guy named Fred Phelps, whose name probably isn't as famous as his group, Westboro Baptist Church. They rose to notoriety for very hateful things about gay people, and then they took it to the next level by protesting soldiers. So they would protest, they would celebrate Memorial Day in a very different day than we did, but they would say thank God for dead soldiers and say all kinds of stuff that the vast majority of people found repugnant. But they would always preach hate and believe that that's what the Bible preached too, was hate. So those are the four. Again, I don't think that they're all that controversial, but we're thinking about these guys as false prophets, and we're going to move on to Matthew 7:17. Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Now, what makes false teachers false in Jesus' narrative here? What is it that makes them false? And what Jesus is saying right here, it's people who are out to harm others. He calls them ferocious wolves. He talks about grapes and thorn bushes and thistles. When you touch them, when you press into them, it hurts your skin, it pricks you, it causes some damage. So Jesus is talking about good tree, good fruit and bad fruit, and that's debatable. We could say what good fruit and bad fruit is, but overall what Jesus is saying is there are people out there who are like wolves. And he says they dress in sheep's clothing. How do we know which ones are sheep and which ones are wolves? You know, we could have a field day with that. Again, there are all kinds of YouTube videos where people are like heretic hunters. This is the teacher that's true. This is false. But let's just kind of set with this idea of good fruit and harming others. A theologian named Schleiermacher gave this really interesting idea of what heresy is, or false teaching, false prophecy. He defined heresy as being something where the appearance of Christianity is retained, but the essence is contradicted. And I find that fascinating. There's an appearance of Christianity, and all of the four prophets we talked about, they had the appearance. They had the same Bible. They preached. They had a hardcore message about faithfulness and all that. They didn't compromise. They would have absolutely believed that the road was narrow. So narrow that maybe it was one in a million, or they were some of the few. So they would have done this, that the appearance, the names, Jesus, the Holy Spirit said, Bible teaches, come to church. But the essence is contradicted. The essence, as Matt said today, Jesus who laid his life down for others, the essence of that was missing. Sacrificial love, or the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Those four leaders, they had the appearance, but all of them, in all instances, they hurt lots of people. Now, they had their ways of justifying it, but in the end, that's one of the things is they were willing to sacrifice other people for themselves. Jesus goes on next in the Sermon on the Mount, and we'd already covered it in detail. We skipped around. But he said that there can be people who claim to do great things, but in the end, he says, even though you say you're doing all these great things, I never knew you. Away from me, you evil doers. Okay, having said all that, that can leave us really insecure, right? Maybe some of you are feeling, am I one of the few? Am I a false teacher? Is this guy a false teacher? That's for everybody, for God to determine. But Jesus did call some evildoers, and he talked about fruit, and he talked about harming others. So I want to go back to this. This is about the narrow gate, the narrow road. So what is the narrow gate? What is it? How narrow is it? How wide is it? Fortunately, in another gospel, Jesus says something else about the gate. Listen to these incredible words from Jesus in John 10:9. I am the gate. Gate is narrow. What's the gate? I am the gate. Whoever, or maybe we'll make it sound a little more extra traditional, whosoever, right? Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Jesus is the gate who is there for whoever. The thief, the quality of the thief is to destroy. The good shepherd lays his life down for others and gives life. Jesus came to love, heal, and forgive. Satan is called the accuser of the brethren. And the Holy Spirit, Jesus called our advocate, who's for us and for what is actually good. Let's keep going into John 10 as we're closing out here. John 10:11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. Now, I think the calling to follow Jesus is not to determine how wide the boundaries are, who's in and who's not. All four of the people did that. They defined it, and they defined it pretty narrow. But that is not, I believe, the calling of Jesus to determine the boundaries. Jesus himself said there are sheep all over the place. But false people will come and appear to maybe sacrifice, but they are also willing to exploit. Jesus said to be shrewd as snakes, so we do have to use discernment. Talking about not judging, I got a plank in my own eye, so I can't point out the speck in somebody else's. But shrewd as snakes, where we use some discernment about who we surround ourselves with or who we listen to or what we listen to, but also innocent as doves. So let's be careful in our accusations or our judgment, because it's a both and. Shrewd as snakes, innocent as doves. And let's go. This is the last verse we're going to look at here, John 10:16. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. Who's the one shepherd? Jesus. It's not me. It's not Pastor Emily. It's not Pastor Brandon. It's Jesus, right? Jesus is the one shepherd and the one flock. And he's even said, we may know, they may not even be in our pen, and we don't know the ones who are going to listen and who are not. So we need to be very humble, and as Jesus does the gospel work. Because one of the things that all four of our leaders or prophets, so-called prophets, have in common is that they were narrow-minded. They said, we got the answers and most others don't. And I believe, as I've been growing and learning, I believe being narrow-minded is one of the surest ways to miss the narrow road that truly gives life by not listening to others, being overconfident, by not being like the guy who said, have mercy on me, but being more like the tax collector who Jesus said, look down on everybody else. But the narrow-mindedness is one of the surest ways to miss that narrow road that Jesus has for us. It actually leads to life with a gospel that sets us free, a gospel that is for every tribe and nation, it's for male and female, slave and free, or it's for whoever. That's the gospel. These last few moments, I'm going off script a little bit. Is that okay? Can I do that? Is that okay, Pastor Emily? All right. Well, I'm thinking about narrow, and this is for me getting a little bit personal here. But I had a friend yesterday who called me peanut butter. Who would do that? He would say, he said, I'm peanut butter because I spread so thin, right? Like I'm all over the place, spread thin. And thinking, and it was funny because I did a random thing on my music this week, and there was a song by fellow Anderson Raven, Stephen Curtis Chapman, that came on that spoke to me, and it said, here I go again, I let myself get spread so thin. And here it is, Memorial Day Sunday, where we're spread thin. That's what happens in church in Indianapolis on Memorial Day Sunday. So it's especially like resonating, like how, so this idea of getting spread thin in the voices. So many different voices call. And here's the big thing. Jesus was latching on to a great prophecy in Isaiah. Isaiah said, whether you go to the left or the right, you will hear a voice that says, this is the way, walk in it. And here in John 10, Jesus is saying, my sheep will hear my voice and follow. So the challenge this week isn't to listen to me or Pastor Emily or whatever. It's not about what pastors to listen to or what. It's about to listen to the voice that leads to life. Because Jesus said it himself, his sheep will know his voice. And Isaiah prophesied it, a true prophet, not a false one, that we'd hear a voice that said, this is the way. Walk in it. May we do that. Do you want to follow Jesus? If you do, I just invite you as our worship team comes up. I invite you to pray this prayer. This is nothing original with us. This is how Jesus taught his followers to pray. So it's very, very safe and it's very powerful, I believe, because it came from Jesus. And the reason we listen to him is because I believe that he rose from the dead and we can trust him as the risen Son of God, that he is the way. So there's some power in this prayer, especially when his people come together and pray it together. So let's go ahead and get the words up there of the Lord's Prayer. Will you pray this with us? Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven.